I'm Kimberly Cronick, Director of Engagement and Educational Outreach at Illinois Public Media. And I use she, her pronouns. Next to me is Dr. Dinesha Grissom, a licensed clinical psychologist in the community. She's currently working to become a prescribing psychologist in the state of Illinois. She resides in the CU community with her family and identifies as cisgender, heterosexual, and Christian. Dr. Grissom uses she, her pronouns. Her roots are in the Midwestern African American Missionary Baptist Church, where she was baptized at age 7. Next to her is State Representative Carol Ammons. She's serving her 5th term, representing the 103rd District of Illinois. Her pronouns are she, hers. Representative Ammons is an activist turned lawmaker who is laser focused on cultivating the crucial relationship between community organizers and the state legislature. Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons is her husband of more than 20 years. Carol is mama bear to her gay son, Amir. Reverend Sally Fritchie is a lifelong Unitarian Universalist, raised in mid-Missouri and ordained in ministry in 2020. Sally's pronouns are she, they. She is currently serving as associate minister to the UU Church of Urbana. And she'll tell you what UUs are in a minute, when I get to her. Reverend Sally is happily married to her high school sweetheart, a woman, and credits her family and faith community for never giving her reason to doubt their love and acceptance. Martha Mills is the mother of a non-binary teenager. They've been a member of the Uniting Pride Board of Directors since 2020 and served as president of the board for 2 years. They are queer, polyamorous, genderqueer community activist. Martha uses they, them pronouns. I also want to know who's in the house, who's in the audience. If you are a mama bear, please either clap or raise your hand. All right. If you're a papa bear, please clap or raise your hand. Okay, got some papas out there. If you're part of the clergy, clap or raise your hand. All right, yeah, we got some. And if you're a member of the LGBTQ community, plus. All right. And we do have a special guest in the audience, well, many special guests. I specifically want to point out Amy Orwick down there. Raise your hand, Amy. Amy is president of PFLAG Peoria Chapter. PFLAG's been around for more than 50 years, parents and friends of lesbians and gays. All right, I'm going to start with Dr. Grissom, and we're just going to go down the line. Can you briefly share the impact the film had on you?
Thank you. So first of all, I want to say thank you all for being here. And I specifically want to say that I had the privilege of being able to review the film prior to today. And I naively thought I could just sit, have an hour and a half, 2 hours, and watch the film as if it was just, you know, a little movie. And I quickly found myself filled with emotion, filled with a depth of concern for our society, filled with a lot of shame. And then towards the end, of course, filled with hope. However, what struck me initially was how, as a society, we've decided that our values and our morals and our theological beliefs and understandings are more important than Esther, than Parker, and than Tammy. We have decided that instead of moving towards humanity, we'll move away from humanity and move towards some vision of a society that is exclusive. It is demeaning and demoralizing. And as a Christian, not only was I brought up in that type of environment, but I struggle to not participate in that type of environment. And so that is how I was impacted initially from the film. Watching it today, I had an opportunity to kind of sit back and take some notes and reflect on some things. And so I will say this, and I'll be very open and honest about this. My perspective here today, I know when you asked, you know, did you ask the question around how many people in here identify as Christian? My perspective today is to challenge Christians. Christian is a follower of Christ, and I don't understand how we can identify as one who follows Christ, and yet what's in front of us is hate. And so that's what I'm here to do, to challenge people who may identify as myself, as cisgendered, heterosexual, a Christian, to challenge you to really consider what is Christ's message to you.
Representative Adams.
I too got an opportunity to watch the film, and I actually watched some reviews of it earlier today. I went back. The first time me and Aaron sat to watch the film, I think we got halfway through, and just through the sheer emotion of the film, could not finish it. The film highlights, yes, the issue of the LGBTQ plus community, right, and the policies that are creating these kind of hostile environments. But it also hit me differently because I don't say that I'm a Christian, first and foremost. And secondly, the idea of how African Americans engage with Christianity is usually oppressive and subjugated based on the historical sojourn of African Americans and the Christian church. And so it has always been a difficulty for me to ascribe completely in that way, or to ascribe myself in that way, or say that that's who I am. Actually, although I study religion and all religions, and I have respect for them, I don't believe they all have respect for me as an African American. And certainly my concern grows daily as I see how religions are used to oppress, kill, murder, maim. And so I've struggled with this, and this film really, there's a few things that I took notes on in particular about the stigma of being LGBTQ. And when me and my husband was sitting with our son, it's not even that you're gay, it's that you're black and gay, and that you're outspoken, and that you're a black power advocate. That's what was concerning for me. What was concerning for me is someone who would harm him. And I sat all the time, and I can tell stories of this, worried about him every time he would go out and he would be too late. And even when he moved out of our home, I probably worried even more. Because even in this community where we're supposed to be safe, what is unspoken is that the African-American sojourn is different and is not included in a way that identifies their historical tradition and trajectory of being black in America. That's problematic. And I think we all have some space to grow when it comes to that as well in this movement.
Thank you, Representative. Reverend Sally.
So I admit I was cynical going into this film. I was worried that it was going to focus too much on the parents and not on the actual queer kids and their experience of being discriminated against and the journey that they have to go on with their parents. Kind of felt like, you know, another story about reformed bigots stepping into the spotlight and getting everyone's, you know, pats on the back for changing their ways. And it wasn't that at all, I felt. And I mean, I was over there crying absolutely for the whole film. And I think particularly the scene of Esther's mom testifying in public and saying that she was sorry for every time she had been on the wrong side, and just saying, I am sorry, I abused you, I abused scripture. I think it's so rare for marginalized people to receive sincere apologies. And obviously it doesn't undo the harm, but it is such an important step that is too often skipped over. And it really will stay with me, I think.
Thank you, Reverend Sally. Martha Mills.
It was honestly kind of hard for me to watch. I also watched it in advance. I watched it yesterday. And then watching it again today, having been on the side of someone growing up in the Christian church who wasn't, you know, who wasn't out and who wasn't even out to myself because of the teachings that I heard, it's even though you know, they are repentant and they are trying to be on the right side, it's still hard to hear a lot of the things they say about prayer and loving everyone. And I do agree that I love that it was very focused on the kids and on the queer community. But it's definitely something that even two times watching it now, I'm still, you know, I have big feelings, and I'm gonna be probably processing it for a little while.
Thank you, Martha. Remember, after a few more questions, we will get to you, and we hope there's a lot of interaction with the panel as well. Reverend Sally, first, briefly, tell us what Unitarian Universalism is.
Oh, well, there is no briefly. So, Unitarian Universalism, very, very briefly, is a non-creedal faith tradition. So we grew out of Protestant Christianity and gradually evolved, changed, expanded to include a variety of sources of inspiration, a variety of different beliefs about God or no God or many gods, about the nature of the universe, about what happens after you die. And at our church, we like to say that we believe in deeds, not creeds. So it's very much about how you choose to live in this world and better it together and be in community together, and less about demanding lockstep theology. So I was lucky enough to be raised UU and am very happy to serve as a UU minister.
Yes, and I wanted to ask you about that. Growing up, your LGBTQ elders in Unitarian Universalism created a welcoming space for you. What impact did the welcoming space have on you, and how did it shape your commitment to queer and young trans people today?
Yeah, so as I said, I feel very lucky to have been raised in Unitarian Universalism because it's a faith tradition that before I was born was really doing the work of becoming truly welcoming and accepting to people of various sexualities and genders. So I, you know, my gratitude, and I know there's some people in the room here who are doing that work within Unitarian Universalism, and I'm very grateful. I think partly it's about growing beyond the idea that churches or faith communities of any kind need to stop doing harm, which is true, but that there is a greater vision of what we could be doing. And that value of churches are a really, or faith communities are a uniquely intergenerational space. You know, people raise their kids up in those spaces, and so many queer kids think that they're the only person who feels the way they feel. And the opportunity to see elders who are out, you know, who are married, who are living happy lives, gave me the ability to see my own future and envision my own happiness in a way that a lot of kids don't get. And that's something I think about a lot in the context of our communities now, is the power of visibility and the power of representation, in that it allows young people to not have to go through that, you know, experience of thinking, I'm a freak, I'm the only one who feels this way, because they have been seeing since they were babies that this is a normal part of humanity.
Martha, you hinted at the impact of the church that you kind of grew up in when you were in junior high and high school, and it was, one of them was the Fellowship of Christ Church in Charleston, and these churches taught their parishioners to love the sinner and hate the sin. How did this teaching impact the development of your sense of who you are, and how do you and your and how did you and your peers talk about sexuality in school?
Say the last part again, sorry.
Oh, how did you told me a little bit about how you talked about sexuality in your school, and what that did to your own development?
Well, yeah, that's the love the sinner, hate the sin was you know, a big thing of what we heard a lot at youth group and church camp, and so it very much sent the message that you know that being queer was absolutely unacceptable. And Tammy in the film said the part where she was like 32 years where she, you know, that she waited, and I'm 42, and it's just been within the last few years that I've really started realizing and accepting, and kind of thinking about and exploring who I am, and I absolutely attribute that to the fact that, you know, I grew up in such a religious kind of community and environment. And in school, you know, my friends were my church friends. And so even though we were largely involved in choir and theater and things like that, where, you know, there's typically a pretty high percentage of people in the queer community in those places as well. I mean, in Charleston, there was maybe one out gay kid when I was, you know, when I graduated in 1999. And my friends and I would talk about how sad it was that, you know, we really liked this guy, but he was going to hell. And yeah, so, you know, it just really made it apparent that that was not an option, that it was not a safe option to even explore that, you know, those notions about myself at the time.
Dr. Grissom, your advocacy for and allyship with LGBTQIA+ communities has evolved and continues to evolve. You describe yourself as culturally responsive and affirming Christian. Your experiences with the Black church have been complicated since you were a teenager. We've heard from Martha how the love the sinner and not the sin practices of the churches she attended harmed her development. What would you like to say to Christians who believe that love the sinner and hate the sin is required of them to be a follower of Christ?
So I'll admit, we were able to get some of these questions beforehand. So I have notes, and I'll be looking down. Because this
is a pre-produced panel.
Yeah, these are questions that, as a community, we don't talk about. I'll preface my comments with, when I was 16, I told my mother, I attended a Black missionary Baptist church that was very, very conservative. Each and every Sunday, I cannot recall one, the pastor would get up and he would share a scripture, and within 10 to 15 minutes of beginning to preach, it would turn into this assault on the LGBT community. And every single Sunday, this would happen. I was aware that our choir director was a gay man. I was also aware that the deacon who tithed the most was a gay man, both closeted. I later found out that my brother identifies as gay. But there was something in me at 16 that was like, I can't do this anymore. There was something that was hurting my soul to be in a room and an environment where we were supposed to go and praise and worship, and it was supposed to be about love and caring for your fellow human, and it became an issue of condemnation and hell. And so I told her when I was 16, I'm leaving this church when I'm 18. And luckily my birthday was on a Sunday of my 18th birthday, and while everybody else was getting up to go to the same church, I went to another church. Unfortunately, I found myself in a series of oppressive churches afterwards. But one of the things that I've always noticed is that comment, love the sinner, hate the sin. I'm aware that there's this self-righteous stance of my sins are not as bad as those sins. So it puts this juxtaposition, us and them. And so I'm going to hold on to my Christian values and my beliefs, and I'm going to say love. But then I'm also going to, in the same sentence, say hate. Now, first, for those of you who are Christian or who are not, that is not in the Bible. It never was, never will be. Well, I don't know if it will be. Somebody might write it in there. But it is not in the Bible. There is a commandment to love God and to love thy neighbors as thyself. Now, I'm understanding, and I'm a psychologist, that some people don't know how to love themselves. So quite frankly, I don't want you loving me if you can't love yourself. That's a different story. However, there's this stance that we have taken in the Christian community that somehow putting love and hate in the same sentence excuses the ways that we behave and the ways that we decide we are going to choose how Christ's love was. And we give ourselves permission to demean, demoralize, and to hate others. And so that's the first thing I want to say. I also want to say that I find it interesting that phrase is not used uniformly. So I'm aware that when someone murders someone, we don't go to the jailhouse and say, I love the sinner, but I hate the sin. No, it's specifically used to attack the LGBTQIQA+ community. And so if we're going to be honest about things as a Christian community, we need to be very, very careful that we are aware that we only use that phrase in certain circumstances. Then I want to, for those who identify as Christian, you're told when you're very young that we are all sinners and we fall short of the glory of God. The church is full of sick, sin-filled people. That's why we're there, right? That's why Christ died on the cross. So if we're all sinners and we all fall short of the glory of God, then where do we find ourselves on a high horse, a self-righteous horse of, number one, deciding what is a sin, and number two, deciding who is condemned to hell as a result of their sin? And so I heard the message growing up. It was also ingrained in me, which is why I say that my experience is always evolving. It's been evolving since my childhood, and I'm open to learning more, open to growing more. But my first concern is if we say that we're Christians and we say that that's who we are, and that's who we purport to be, then love is how we should lead. And hate cannot, darkness cannot be in the same space as light. Hate cannot be in the same space as love.
Representative Ammons, you and Aaron are Mama and Papa Bear, respectfully, for all of your children. Your gay son has been struggling a bit and thought he had to do so on his own. You said no and invited him back to live with you and Aaron so he doesn't have to go through what he's going through alone. Knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently raising Amir around the belief systems that were absorbed by your family and this culture?
I think first and foremost, I say out loud that I love every bit of Amir. I mean, he is mine in that sense of not ownership, but as close as you're gonna get to it. He's talented and he's brilliant and smart. I really believed he was the smartest person that I knew. And as he was growing up, I think we were extraordinarily protective of him. And even though we attended religious services, and we still do, we allow him the space to decide what he wants to do. And he gets to make that decision. And children, they always have that voice to make that decision for themselves as they want it to do. But we struggle often with other folk in our family who, you know, may find it difficult to see his full humanity. And that has been a struggle that we've engaged, and we will push back no matter who it comes from. And we will unequivocally tell them that he is absolutely the most brilliant person that we know. And we will defend at all costs. So the mama bear thing is real for me. I'm a defender. If people out there know me, they know I'm a fighter. I am not going to allow my son at all to have any low self-esteem from other people's hate, their derisiveness. We won't accept it at all. When I realized we had a conversation in our kitchen maybe about a month and a half ago, and we knew something intuitively was wrong, was not correct, it wasn't going the way Amir wanted it. And I remember Aaron in the kitchen, and he's very perceptive, and he reached over and told Amir that it was okay. He just said it was okay. Whatever it is that you are struggling with, you're struggling with community, you're struggling with relationships, it's okay, and we are here for you. And I was hounding him like over and over, like, you need to move home. You need to move home, because I worry so much. So I wanted him so desperately to come home, but he didn't want to. And so we took that moment to tell him that it was okay to come home. Whatever's happening, it's okay to come home. We went away after session this year, came back. He had moved everything in. I mean, all over the place, now I'm mad about how he put it in the house. But I'm so relieved in some sense that he feels that he can come home, that he is not running up against parents who deny or demean him in any way, shape, or form based on whatever decision he decides to make in his life. We want him to be a humanitarian. We don't want him to be selfish. We want him to care about other people. Right? We want him to care about a better world for other children coming up. And that's the most important thing to me as mom, to make sure that he's not taking it as if it's just a privilege for him. But no, other people don't have that support base. And he does. And that's important for him to share himself with others who may not have that support base.
Thank you. Martha. Your child, Max, is gender diverse. Max uses Z and Zer pronouns. When Max shared Max's gender fluidity with you at age 8, how did you respond?
admittedly, I botched it. At first, I was concerned that Z was kind of saying that Z was non-binary because Z had a friend who was non-binary, and I thought that maybe Z was just like doing it in solidarity. And then Z made it clear soon after the first time Z said something that no, like this was really what Z knew about Zerself as well, and that, you know, having the friend really just kind of made it click. And so at that point, I you know, made it clear to Zier that, of course, that was, you know, absolutely great. And we talked to Zier teacher at the time and school administration, and thankfully they were pretty supportive. It's always kind of a learning curve for everyone in those situations, but throughout Zier Elementary School experience, it was a thankfully positive and affirming situation for the most part.
Max is in middle school. Mm-hmm. What bathroom does Max use at school?
Max does not use the bathroom at school, because in spite of the millions of dollar upgrades that Champaign schools have gone through, they neglected to include gender-neutral bathrooms, except for, you know, like one on the far side of school. So if Z can at all avoid it, Z does not use the bathroom at school. Luckily, Z is getting ready to go to a different school in the fall, and they have a lot better, they have more options. So I'm glad for that. I will say it's not a great place to try to. I feel like I will also say the views and opinions stated here are mine and do not reflect Uniting Pride of Champaign County. Hi, Nicole. The Champaign Public Schools, I have long gotten the impression that they kind of hope that this batch of queer and gender diverse kids will move through the ranks and they won't have to deal with it anymore. I'm glad that Z is going to be going to a more affirming and accepting place in the fall.
Dr. Grissom, you have a son who attends a Christian religious school. Tell us why it's important you send him there, and what do you do at home to counteract the school's use of the Bible to teach that homosexuality is a sin?
So, one of the biggest parts and reasons why we sent our son there was for safety purposes. Safety and education purposes. Smaller classes, I have a black child, and I don't want him to find himself in situations in public schools where he's connected to the wrong groups of people, or he's forced to be in groups of people that I don't want him to be with and are not safe. So we chose to put him somewhere we felt was safe enough. Our decision to do that, we talked heavily about all types of issues because this particular Christian school has very rigid beliefs and values. And we are often in situations where every day we are correcting and educating about, re-educating about what is truth, and encouraging him to be more curious, be more aware, and be an advocate. And so when we talk about same sex loving or issues around sexuality or issues around gender, we're very careful in our commentary with our son to talk about context in our own growth and development. And we encourage him in particular to consider, what would Christ do? So you know about the Bible. What does it say? How would Christ respond? Would Christ exercise? Would Christ exclude? Would Christ harm, injure, hate? What would Christ do? And we ask him that question. And he talks about, you know, no, that's not something that Christ would say. That's not something that Christ would do. Christ would love. Christ would embrace. And so that's the way that we talk about things with our son, related to sexuality and gender. But we're very careful to be aware that the messages that he receives, and he's aware of how we feel about it. When he started going to the school, we said, look, you're going to hear some things, you're going to see some things that you don't agree with and that we don't agree with. And we want you to be able to have conversations with us on a daily basis, number one, about what you're hearing, about what you're learning, and what you're seeing. And we want to help correct those things. Because you're going to get one perspective, we want to offer you some different perspectives. We're also aware that if he would have gone to a public school, he's going to get some perspectives, and he would have had to come home, and we would have had to correct those perspectives. So the issue for us was a matter of safety. Is my son going to be safe in this environment, physically safe? So that was our decision around that.
Reverend Sally, how does this all make sense to you? How can the intersection of the history of racism and heterosexism in the Christian church and its impact on public policy and cultural norms be reconciled?
I think there's a toxic thread interwoven into some of the most deeply held beliefs in a variety of traditions, I will say, in America and globally. And there is a thread of hierarchy, of shame, shaming others and shaming ourselves. What you said earlier about don't love me the way you love yourself if you can't love yourself, that's really real. And thinking about in the faith communities where pastors are preaching against the homosexuals, what are they saying about women? You know, what are they saying about the body and sexuality as a whole? You know, that self-hatred turned in on to our own beings is so toxic. And it is the responsibility of everyone, every faith community, every individual, to unpick that thread. But I do, there were two things I wanted to make sure I said before I left today. And one is, you know, the people who are doing the work of unpicking that thread have my absolute respect and admiration, but that it can be really difficult to witness. Like Martha was saying, it's hard to hear these moms say the things that they say in this documentary. It can be hard to realize how much difficulty someone is having accepting you and loving you. So the thing I wanted to say to all the LGBTQ people here is that you are not difficult to love. And that the thing that's between you and the acceptance and love you deserve is not you, and it's not God. You know, it's them, and it's the stuff they're bringing, and it's the lies they have believed and incorporated into their selves. And that's what's difficult to work through. It's not you that's difficult to work through. The other thing I wanted to say related to this is that I do think there are still persuadable people out there. I think the work of trying to persuade is really valuable. But I also think we don't have to wait to persuade everyone. And that those who are legislating, those who are making Supreme Court decisions today, aren't waiting to persuade everyone. And I think that there is real value in gathering your community around you, gathering the mama bears, you know, gathering those who you know are on board and starting to do the work that you know needs to be done.
We're going to have one more One more question of our panelists, and I'd like you in the audience to get your questions in mind. We're going to have mics that come around. I also want to let you know this is recorded audio-wise, and this will go out publicly, so if you don't want to have your name attached to what you say, please don't say your name, but ask your question. Representative Ammons, you got into elected office to bridge the gap between activism and lawmaking. In this regard, has the film and this discussion given you any new inspiration or ideas?
You know, it did. It made me, earlier today, as I was going back through the enormous amount of legislative work that we've done to affirm the LGBTQ community in Illinois. Certainly, Illinois is a leader in that space. We are absolutely a leader, no question about that. We saw maybe just about 22, you started seeing all of these anti-LGBTQ plus bills, 417 of them introduced in the last legislative session. And it was any and everything you could possibly think of, no matter how stupid it was. It was introduced by someone who seems to be intelligent, right? And that was really mind-boggling for me. As I watched the film again today, I had this thought, because I worked on removing the penalty for people who are living with HIV and may not know it and unknowingly pass it, right? And that's a criminal penalty that was, two intersections were happening around this bill. One was that, of course, it criminalized people living with HIV. That was the first part. But the second part is that the people who were harmed by that law that was on the books for probably 30 years were largely African American. And so, again, I saw that intersectionality there. And so that's what made us work so diligently on. But I had this idea today about expanding resources specifically to recruit organizations and advocate groups for the Black community in particular to remove the stigma in the Black community. A lot of work is being done. Certainly we work with the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, the UP Center, and all of the groups, but none is being done to really reach into the Black community. That has to be done because we have adopted a Christianity that is antithetical to our very being as Black people. And so this conversation will never come up if we don't actually start on purpose working in those communities, specifically talking to people in the community that you may just assume doesn't want to talk to you, but you would be really shocked. As our doctor said earlier, no, the pianist was already gay. I mean, what do you mean? We knew this a long time ago. I don't understand why this is a secret, but removing the stigma, I think, has a lot of work to be done around it. And certainly, as I work with Black LGBT activists at the state level, that is something they speak about on a regular basis. And so I hope to introduce some legislation to get us to have navigators in that community so that we will begin to remove that stigma in an open and official way that is specifically being done.
All right, I want to give time for the audience to ask questions. For those interested, there is a drag show at 10 that the Up Center is presenting, and so if you want to get to that, it's at the Axe Bar. We have about 20 minutes right now where you can have conversation. Who would like to ask the first question? We have mics. Anyone? Anybody have a question or a comment that you'd like to share? Wow, we covered it all? Man, we're good. Don't be afraid. This is a loving space. This is a space to show who you are and be applauded for it.
Sorry about that. I didn't see your hand.
Hello.
Turn my mic on. All right, we got a question.
Hi, I'm Carissa. I live in Champaign, and thank you all for speaking tonight and to those of you who brought the film. It's difficult to watch the film, but I guess I'm also really taking away this perspective of, I was at my daughter's fifth grade graduation this year, and was so relieved that the trans children were recognized by the correct pronouns at a public school graduation in 2023, but also so struck that for my children, that's not startling at all. It's not a worry they had that their classmates' correct pronouns would be used. And I have a lot of hope for our kids, and we are the problem. You know, we're working on it, we're evolving, we're learning, and I just think Esther and the other kids in the film, like, that's really something to hold on to and to celebrate and to keep alive, so. That message of hope, I guess, continues to shine for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else? Who else?
Question your entire
year? Yes, go ahead, Michael.
I don't have Robert, any Michael. Question. I want to build on something Carol Ammon said about Illinois being a leader. The first known gay organization in all of North America was in Chicago after World War I. The first state to decriminalize, legalize sodomy was Illinois. The first city to have gay rights was Urbana in the state. The second one was Champaign. And it turned out, I did not know this, although I was involved with it, was the third or fourth city in your local government in the entire United States to have protection for gender identity. There are things that we as people here have a right to be proud of.
And Robert, Michael, thank you for being there in a lot of that history. Not the World War I history, but the recent, since the 70s. You're welcome. Who else has a question or a comment?
Question again to your left. Hi, my name is Kirk. I'm trans, and I grew up around here and also in Monticello, which is very close. And I wasn't raised religious, so some of this film wasn't always applicable to me, but what struck me is that even though I didn't necessarily go to church growing up, I sure had a lot of classmates that did, and all of those classmates carried their views, you know, with them. And so the work you're doing isn't just going to help people in the religious community, you know, it's going to help all of us love each other more, you know? So I just wanted to say thank you for that, and I thought you all had really wonderful things to say.
Thank you. Questions, comments?
Hi, I'm Trish. I'm a mama bear. I say PSC, pre-Schitt's Creek. And I'm a proud mom of two beautiful young men. One is heterosexual, one is homosexual. And I'm a wannabe mom of a wonderful young trans man. He had a crisis in January, and he's currently in the hospital. And I'm having trouble because his parents reject him. And that's part of what's happening. Sorry. And I have a hard time with religious basis of what it does to these kids. And I had a hard time at times seeing what, I don't know how you don't get angry and how you don't, I don't know how I'm gonna not be angry about the messages, the stupidity and the ignorance. But it was a wonderful film, and I appreciate all of you, and I'm sorry.
It's okay. Bless you. Nobody here is angry on the panel?
I get super angry. I've had to check myself multiple times tonight not to swear, because I figure it's probably inappropriate, but I get very, very angry, and we actually have a little joke. Anytime I've ever had to write any sort of public statement or make any sort of public statement, either on behalf of Uniting Pride or just on behalf of myself, I write the initial statement, and I say that it starts with me, and it starts as a Southern Baptist sermon. I give it to my friends. They edit it down to a Methodist sermon. And then I give it to my partners, and they get it down to a UU sermon. And that's eventually when that's how I eventually give the statement.
Martha. So, I get very angry. Can you all hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. I get angry, very angry. And one of the major reasons I get very angry as a Christian is because I was taught that the first place that you learn about unconditional love of Christ is in your home. And my biggest concern with Christians is that when we teach our children that they are not loved, that they are not cared for, and that love is conditional, it's based on whether you meet a certain standard or an expectation, then what we do is we set them up to have a relationship with God that is conditional. God's love is conditional. As a psychologist, I get real, can I cuss? I get real shitty because I see families come into my office and they're more concerned about how other people think about them than this child that you gave birth to, who you allegedly love and care about, who is telling them, I don't want to live anymore. And I have watched too many children die by suicide because their parents and their family and the people who say that they love them don't accept them. And so my anger is self-righteous in some ways, because I look at people and I'm one of those psychologists who doesn't necessarily, I'll say it in a very curious way, but I will ask you, are you more concerned about your theology, your beliefs, and how other people think about you than this person who is your child and whom you care about? Are those, what's important to you? What are your values? What is priority? And I challenge people in that way, because we have too many children who are dying. because they don't meet a certain standard or an expectation, and yet we purport that we love the Lord and we're Christian and we're followers of Christ, but I don't see that. So yeah, I get angry.
We got a question right over here.
All right, so it's not a question, it's a comment. So thank you, Kim, for being your authentic self, as you always are. Thank you very much. I remember the story you told about going to Springfield and unveiling the banner across the top for marriage equality, and you have not changed. And we thank you and we love you so much for everything that you do. To all of the panelists, of course, my lovely wife up there, I better say something nice about, because we got to go to Custer Cut before it closes. I want to say that the film brought out in me, the first time, a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, because the culture in which I grew up in the United States, inside of the African-American community in a very conservative religious way, not even really direct, it was just, this isn't appropriate, this isn't allowed, it's a sin, right? Even though we, like you said, we knew, we used to even talk about it and make little crazy, inappropriate jokes about the person who we knew was the choir director. And when we said those inappropriate things, but we knew what was going on. So there's a hypocrisy that exists within the United States and within the subcultures within the United States. But I do want us to focus on, I'm focusing on, and I hope others will see, that the what we perpetuate, what was put into us in our formative years, that as I'm sure doctor, our psychologist can say, that first 7 years of your life when you were being formed forced me, I believe in many ways, to create a space in my home where my son, he didn't have the space where he could come and talk to me. He didn't. I'm not going to lie about that. I know he didn't. I know that he came out to someone else, maybe my daughter or my sister, before he ever came and spoke to us. And then even felt like he had to say, maybe I'm bi, so that it would be softer for me, right? I can't speak for Carol, but that's what it is for me. And I think that the only way for me to help create the culture that I want to create is that I have to own the fact that I was saturated in sexism, I was saturated in homophobia or being afraid or being willing to otherize people who were gay and lesbian in our community. And it's really a hypocritical thing for me to do when I'm fighting like hell to make sure that as an African person that I have humanity and I'm treated with humanity as well. So for my African son who loves horse riding and studies Islam and is gay, what a hell of an experience that had to be. But I'm encouraged by Kai, because Kai walks this earth like, I'm finna change this culture, and that's exactly what I want Amir to do too. Thank you all for everything that you are doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I want to get one more question, because I do recognize sometimes people just want to come up and talk to the folks and not through the microphone. So I want to just, let's just take one more question. Also remind, we have PFLAG from Peoria here. We have the chapter president. She is here. Talk with her as well. PFLAG was well before the Mama Bears, so I just wanted to throw that out there. One last question, and then please come on up and formally if you have some things you want to say more privately.
Right back here in the center.
Hi, I have a quick comment and then a question that I think is mostly for Representative Ammons. My comment is, Martha, I see you. I am bi. I grew up in a Catholic household. I don't know, I'm atheist now, but I see you about having a whole lot of feelings about this film. I was extremely wary and ambivalent coming in, and there was a lot of it that was really difficult, but you know, you're not alone here. A lot more to say about that, but anyway. My question for Representative Ammons, and maybe you too, Doctor, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, the psychologist, is, I'm here as an ally at the moment for one of my daughter's best friends. My daughter has two best friends. They are twins. The three of them have been joined at the hip for more than half their lives. And one of the twins is trans, and she is going to hit puberty pretty soon. Her mom and her dad have been struggling and struggling and struggling to get her care. They went to Luray for a long time. Of course, that's a 3-hour drive. Then they tried going to St. Louis. That's another 3-hour drive. St. Louis is about to become not an option because of legal things happening in Missouri. So now they are struggling and struggling and struggling to find care for their daughter that is here and local. And they're at the point that they think maybe they found something in Peoria. They're kind of hoping, but what needs to happen on a legislative level, on a community level, to get more specialists here? I mean, this is Urbana-Champaign. There's a lot of queer community here. We must have a number of trans kids who need this care. What do we need to do to get it for them? And of course, we have people coming in from out of state too, like we talked about the internal refugee problem. So there's a need. What do we do to meet it?
I just want to do a quick shout out. The 21st show, which is on Illinois Public Media, 11 to noon, it's going to be 5 days a week. We have done a whole series on queer and trans and LGBTQ for Pride Month, and we actually talked to some doctors in this community who give gender affirming care. So I just want to quickly throw that out and then go to Representative Animas.
And I appreciate that you highlighted that, Kim. We actually passed in our, certainly for low-income communities in Medicaid, but also in the insurance provisions to allow for gender affirming care in Illinois. So we passed the legislation for that. Now, that was a huge deal for us to do. If people are running up against that and they can't find doctors, I think that that's an important thing for us to know so that we can work with our networks, our insurance networks, as well as Medicaid in the state of Illinois, to find and identify and make available list of doctors who can become providers for those who need gender-affirming care. I'm glad that we've already did the legislative part. The second part is always the community part, which is why the activism is so important. Because if we pass it legislatively and doctors are still denying care or denying people with Medicaid for gender-affirming care, then we need to know that so that we can go back and strengthen whatever the legislative trigger would be to make them provide that service, because they have a right to health care, right? That is a universal right, is health care. And that gender-affirming care is necessary in the community. So I'm hoping, not that it's already taken place, but we just did it about 6 months ago. I'm hoping that you'll start seeing this transition and this change where we have more providers available, and that insurance companies are not playing that little game. I really dislike the insurance companies a whole bunch. But if they are doing things that are denying service, after we've passed the legislation, we need to know that. And that usually comes from the community. So I encourage you to reach out to my office. Let me know if that is happening so that we can go back and do whatever it takes to make it solid for folks who need the services.
Thank you. I really am grateful to my panel to really work with me as collaborators to get the message out that these conversations can happen in public. You have people here who are of different faiths, different sexualities, different genders, talking together, trying to make things better. So I want to thank Martha Mills, Reverend Sally, Representative Adams, Dr. Grissom. I could talk with you for hours, but I want to give the audience a chance to come up and talk with you one-on-one. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kimberly, and we love you.